God damn it. I'm still hoping for swine flu. Inappropriately enough.
You're hoping that you can track swine flu so you don't have to go to E3?
No, I'm hoping other people get it.
It's May 20th, 2009.
And this is Autothumbs 28, and I'm Chris Remo.
And I'm Nick Brecken.
And I'm Jake Rodkin.
Sweet. Well, we're back.
Yeah.
Yes.
Did you miss us last week during Extreme News Extravaganza?
That silence is where you can insert your own response.
Yeah.
So, go back and rewind if you need to try that again.
Yeah.
So how about that Duke Nukem?
Oh, son of a bitch.
What?
Yeah, I heard the Duke Nukem happened.
Oh, man. He's not around anymore.
Yeah.
Well, he might be in portable form.
Yeah, which is everybody's really excited about that.
Yeah. Well, he does.
He does.
Yeah.
That's great.
Isn't there supposed to be a statement from that company this week?
Yeah, they released
which,
it.
Portable
oh,
form?
What did they say?
Or, last week. They were just like, hey, we're looking for a live-action Duke Nukem actor.
Really?
Yeah, that was it.
That's their statement?
That was it.
Weird.
Yeah. And then they've been sort of riding this Duke Nukem wave,
all the new,
and sort
I mean,
of like
sure they're getting way more.
They're updating like, their Twitter. Agree, they're like John St. John came in yesterday. He was doing voice acting. Yeah. It was really great. And that was
I guarantee they're going to get 5,000 times more E3 appointments now than they would have.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
This is the Duke game that actually ships.
Right.
Maybe
the side-scrolling handheld one.
This one will probably come out. I mean, there have been a billion Duke Nukem games that weren't made by 3D Realms, so
right.
I don't see any reason to think that they're not
more than they've made. Yeah.
Did you see the comment by Jason Bergman on Twitter today who said,
"Yeah, that's hilarious."
News
yeah, the Al Jazeera,
of Duke Nukem reporting.
That was good.
Apparently, someone around in the Take-Two offices was
overheard in the office. Yeah,
which is pretty hilarious.
Yeah, that was good.
Yeah. Anyway,
yeah, Duke.
What a weird situation this is.
Yeah,
I mean, it's almost. I mean, I know everyone's already gone through this a million. We're fucking super late to the party on this, but it is weird. Like, I still have the PC Gamer issue that announced Duke Nukem Forever in like 1997. Like, I don't know. It was weird. I was looking forward to that game long before I started writing about games or anything. Like, when I was just like a dude who played PC games, and I subscribed to Computer Gaming World and PC Gamer, I'm like, oh man, Duke Nukem 3D was really fun. This game's gonna be sweet.
And it was
12 years later.
Yeah,
I'm doing a podcast about video games, talking about the death of this game that is somehow still in development.
It's really unbelievable. Anymore, like when you go back through the timeline and look at it,
yeah,
it's just it feels like that game should have been released in like you know. Out of 1,000 alternate universes, like, Duke has been released in all of them except for, like, ours. You know what I mean? Like
we're the anomaly?
Yeah, it's just bizarre.
Yeah, I think a couple weeks ago we were talking about collector's editions, and I said the thing that I really wanted to see was the Duke Nukem Forever collector's edition.
Before that game was canceled.
And now what I really want is the Lost in La Mancha of Duke Nukem, where you could buy the DVD that you'd put into your PC, and it would play the Quake 2 thing, and then like the sort of like heartfelt piano, like documentary piano would come by, and then like a bank of like Broussard would show up and be like, we thought we were onto something. And then you play through a little more of the level until it like crashes out, and then you get like when the title screen comes up, the story of Duke Nukem Forever. That would be fucking amazing. An interactive, depressing documentary.
Some kind of like menu like shell behind it that detects when you crash out and then loads the next part.
Right, that's what I'm talking about.
That would be incredible.
Yeah, if it was, you play through all the sort of busted chunks of build mixed with people in the industry and former and current 3D Realms, people like reminiscing about Duke Nukem Forever. So you just, it's this weird interactive documentary of tears.
You could probably make that pretty cheap and sell a bunch of it on the internet.
It could cost $20 million.
Yeah.
Apparently, there was some kind of statement that came out. I think I probably saw it on Check, where they said they still have the rights to sell the game directly to consumers or something.
Right. Certain rights to sell something or other. Very hazy.
3D Realms apparently technically still exists as a very, very small company.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure they exist as a bundle of debt and despair.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they have direct consumer rights?
I guess so. I mean, probably the agreement was signed before digital distribution was much of a concern.
Cool. So get ready for Duke Nukem Forever, finished by hand by Broussard himself.
yeah.
Available where only you mention at 3DRealms.com.
Lost in La Mancha, because they're actually making that movie now.
Wait, really?
The
Man Who Killed
Us. Yeah, it was announced like earlier last Gilliam week. Gilliam
said he's picking it up again. Over the last year, he's sort of been scraping the rights and stuff back together, and he's finally starting pre-production.
Yeah. So even that's going to get made.
For people who aren't aware of what Lost in La Mancha is, it's a documentary that was made about a Terry Gilliam film that was intended to be just a sort of traditional documentary about the filming.
Yeah, it was supposed to just be like the featurette that you'd get on your DVD or whatever.
And it turned out to be this amazing chronicle of just the epic downfall of this film that was just besieged by like natural disasters and medical problems with the actors and funding issues and all sorts of shit, that some of which might have been mismanagement on Gilliam's part, but a lot of which was just fate pissing in his eye.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's really worth watching. It's something that it would be really cool to see, you know, so that kind of thing exists with a game production, but I don't know if you could ever do that due to the way games are made.
What's also really interesting about that is the Johnny Depp character is now going to be a filmmaker. Like, they've changed his role.
Oh, he's not an 80s cutthroat businessman.
Yeah, he's no longer an ad executive or whatever. He's actually a filmmaker now, which is kind of weird and, you know, metaphorical, but whatever.
Yeah, very fitting. That's remarkably fitting.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, so that's a video game coming soon from Terry Gilliam.
Cool.
Yeah. Duke Nukem. Well,
yeah.
He is the Don Quixote of video games.
Yes, he is.
Or maybe George Broussard is. Yeah. I don't know. There's some kind of metaphor in there.
Yeah.
The Duke of Nukem lives on, though.
It's true.
On the Amstrad.
Yep. No one knows what you're talking about.
That's true.
Anyway.
So I've been playing the shit out of Defense Grid.
Oh, really?
Randomly. Yeah. Finally I beat that entire game.
Did you like it?
I got a gold medal on every level. No, I hated it. I enjoyed it. No, yeah. I played the whole thing. I like it. It's tower defense. It's just really polished, well-balanced, well-made tower defense. Yeah. And
there's a grid involved as well?
It's totally a fucking grid. I really only picked it up because it was the kind of thing where it launched at $20 and there's no goddamn way. Like, I'm not usually the guy who gets all up in arms about price points of digital distributed games. I just don't usually care, but I don't know, $20 for tower defense when so many good tower defense games are free seemed a little excessive. Yeah. But Steam had a sale recently where it was available for $5, so I figured, what the hell? I picked it up and I got a whole lot of time out of it. So, you know,
cool.
So it was worth the $20.
It probably would have been, but I don't know.
You bastard!
I know.
Yeah, I really like that game.
Yeah,
I've been playing a lot of Plants vs. Zombies.
Yeah, I keep seeing you on that on Steam.
Yeah, everyone I didn't think I was going to like it. I thought I was going to hate it.
Except us, apparently. Have you been
No, I haven't played it yet.
Yeah.
I picked it up, actually, but I haven't actually played it yet.
Yeah. See, I didn't think I was going to like it. I thought it would just be sort of a bullshit PopCap take on tower defense, which it kind of is. Like, it's sort of like Peggle Cross with tower defense, but...
Weird.
Yeah, I mean, it has that sort of, you know, you have to... Fast reflexes, you know, very, very, you know, action-y, arcade-y type of thing where you're clicking all over the place, you know.
Yeah.
But also strategy. So, and what's really cool about it, though, is just how much content there is. I mean, it's just huge. Like, it's really a lot of value. So that's cool. There's like a ton, you know, there's a ton of goddamn mini game modes and puzzles and things to do after you beat it.
It's got modes.
Yeah, it's got lots of modes.
Well, they apparently spent like 3 years developing this game, which for a PopCap game is pretty out of control.
That's I thought PopCap usually spent a sort of longer time than you would expect for a casual game on their games. I remember reading that their polish cycle is usually huge for the sort of style of game that they make, but I guess 3 years is fucking a lot.
I mean a lot of like full-on AAA games.
Yeah, they're approaching like Schaefer time.
Yeah, it's I mean from what I've heard around the office from people who were talking to them, that it definitely was a higher investment than they usually make, but also it seems to have spread to a bigger audience than they usually get. I mean, it seems like a lot of gamers who don't usually pay much attention to PopCap games have been playing this game for whatever reason. I think they hit on a fairly easily marketable theme and were able to kind of sneak in a game that is palatable to
But by zombies in the versus name zombies in the name of the title.
Yeah.
It's a fairly cynical. Like, I mean,
have there been a few of those? There's Plants. Yeah. There's Plants versus Zombies. There's Stalin versus Martians. There's another versus
Pirates versus Ninjas.
No, but I mean, just like in this like month or two, there have been I think three possible versus games that have come out. I can't remember the third one, but
yeah.
It's definitely something that it's that also, gamers and internet people are very susceptible to.
Yeah,
yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
yeah. The Pirates versus Dodgeball.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Pirates versus Dodgeball. I like to play as Dodgeball.
Yeah,
Jake as the dad.
Yeah, I heard you look like Big Bird.
That's true. I do.
Yeah.
Who looks like a dad?
Sweet.
Yeah. Oh, I've been playing a lot of Killing Floor too.
Oh, really? How is that?
Now, that sounds like a video game.
Yeah. Well, it's got zombies in it.
Killing Floor versus Killing Ceilings. Game.
Yeah. It's a mod that is now costing you money.
But, you know, but I mean, what is Killing Floor? I don't really know a whole lot.
Well, it used to be a Unreal Tournament mod. And basically, it's just, you know, it's a zombie survival mod. And but it's more realistic take. I mean, the team got sort of acquired by Tripwire, and they're... You know, they put out a retail.
Oh, the team did, or just the game?
You know, actually, I don't know if it's. I think the team is part of them. Okay. Is part of the developer now. I'm not sure. I don't know. I might be wrong. I might be talking out of my ass. But anyway,
gross.
Yeah, but no, it's a good game.
Sweet.
It's kind of moddy, but once you get past the sort of weird, you know, terrible UI and you know, kind of. Well, it's kind of hilarious.
About this.
It looks like, you know, a UI from a mod from 1999. It's really hard on the eyes, but once you get past that, it's pretty cool. It has one thing: you can weld doors shut, which I really like. I like hiding in buildings.
Yeah,
you like welding,
which is something you can't do in Left 4 Dead, which always makes me mad.
How similar is it to Left 4 Dead? I mean, that might
not
be...
similar at all.
Okay.
It's more
a really uninformed question. I know.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, I mean, basically you start out at the beginning of a level and it's sort of, there's a wave of zombies and you have freedom to move around the level, but essentially you're, you know.
So like Left 4 Dead.
Yeah, but you save.
You have guns.
Yeah. You,
like Left 4 Dead. It's a video game. A computer game.
Yeah, it's a computer game.
You're saying it's the same.
Yeah, it's basically the same.
Pretty much like
playing. No, you were going to actually say why it's not the bullshit. Same, so let's hear it.
Oh, all right.
Unless you don't want to say.
Well, no, it's...
Because you can say if you want.
It's actually like Fable 2, is what I was going to say.
What?
Well, yeah, there's a breadcrumb trail. There's actually a breadcrumb trail that leads you from point to point.
Does it teach you to love? Is there a dog?
No dog. Oh, there should be a dog.
There's condoms, though.
Weird.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, no, it's worth checking out if you're a fan of zombies, I guess, versus zombies.
So you can either, you know, if you're a fan of both Plants and Zombies, mm-hmm. pick up Plants versus Zombies,
but just zombies.
Only zombies, pick up Killing Floor.
Pretty much.
Yeah, sounds good.
Yep.
Good neither reviews. Of those things, pick up Defense Grid Force. Grid what?
Defense Grid Force.
Yeah.
2010.
I wanted to say Defense Force for some reason.
It's cool.
Yep.
Yeah.
You been playing anything, Jake?
I updated Team Fortress in Steam last night, so I got that going. Good I didn't job. Play it.
Well done.
Isn't that, like, automatically update?
Not when I forget to keep Steam running. That's how often I've been playing games lately. It's been pretty heinous.
Yeah.
Even more so than my usual failure to play games. We're busting our butt because now that E3 is back, game developers get to bust their butt for E3 again. So that's cool.
Sweet.
Fuck that. yeah.
Good times.
Maybe I played some Super Smash Brothers. I watched some people play Street Fighter. You know, read the internet. Read a lot of news. Yeah. That's all I have to say about video games this week. So, you know... I love games.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome.
I continue to find myself wishing that you got achievements for the Netflix channel on the on the Xbox 360.
Yeah.
Because I would be...
That would be good, yeah.
You know, yeah. Rest of the world trounced by my gamer score.
I haven't used that recently.
Yeah.
As my input.
I know, it's not cool anymore. Yeah.
Yeah. Man,
I am actually really super sad that we missed last week.
Yeah, there were so many things that we missed out on, and now we're just like,
what else was there?
Richard Garriott sued for $24 million. That's amazing.
Yeah, that's true.
We're like the kids who like missed the week at school, and we're coming back and we're out of it.
I've got to mention something about that $24 million. I'm pretty
27 million.
I'm pretty goddamn sure he sued for $27 million.
Yeah, he did,
and like some blog misquoted it as 24
yeah,
million.
Yeah, I couldn't
and
remember which one it
everybody
was.
Everybody else in the
we
world
didn't.
I'm sorry.
It as 24.
I said 24 on the podcast last week because I knew we had this conversation about which number it was. I looked on Google, like, Richard Garriott lawsuit 24 million, yeah. Richard Garriott lawsuit 27 million, and I think 24 million had more.
Yeah,
because
everyone
lot.
Got it
you
off
Google
the first
trended
blog
it?
That reported it.
I didn't. Fuck that. I recorded last week's podcast on my PowerBook. But yeah, so sometimes when one guy says 24 million, the rest of the internet says, who needs to fact check? This blog that I've never read said 24.
That happens sometimes.
It might have been 27, or it was 24 and we all look like douchebags.
It could be that too. Either way, someone misreported something. Maybe us or maybe someone else.
Yeah. Oh, I guess it's worth saying that the reason that I made sure that I had TF2 updated is because Meet the Spy came out, which made
my brain how badass
explode.
Was that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
So I met the spy, and then I met him about 15 more times immediately after that video was amazing.
It really was. Yeah. Like,
did you guys see the update today?
No.
Oh, it's hilarious.
You mean 2 days ago?
Right. Yes. Yeah, they put it at the bottom. They for the list of achievements, they put a special corporate achievement, which was fail, like a little icon that said fail, and then the achievement was internet's failure or something, and like, you know, learned, you know, we didn't, now we know how to use YouTube or something, and just some like random thing, like they admitted
that
they totally
that was
fucked
cool
it up.
I was perfectly fine with Valve putting the video up 2 days early or whatever.
Yeah, it's funny though because it actually wasn't intentional.
Yeah,
but it ended up tying really well.
It seemed like that when they after hacked.
Well, they actually went back in and edited the video, and on the board on the spy, like there's that board at the beginning where all the spy things are, and it underneath one of the things they erased it and put internet leak or something like video leak
That's
or something.
Awesome.
Yeah. But anyway.
But yeah, that video sort of represents everything that I think is great about the sort of the sort of tone and atmosphere of TF2. Yeah. We were talking about that for a long time, stupidly, a couple days ago.
Yeah.
But it's great.
Yeah, it's one of the only games, and I, you know, there might be other examples, but it's one of the only games I know of, certainly one of the only current games I know of, that tries to, well, successfully, I think, creates a new approach to what a character is in between the discrete named character and the generic sort of, you know, sniper or scout or demo man class.
Right.
Like, it creates this weird, like, instanced version of a character that's very specific to games.
They do a good job of like, I mean, I don't know, I feel like when you play a game like that, at least if you're a certain type of player, like a game that doesn't do what TF2 does, your brain kind of, if the game is the right kind of game and you're the right kind of player, you sort of fill in that sort of tonal space around what the character is, where you're like, oh, I'm, you know, when you're sniping and it's just like you sort of feel like you're that guy. And it's great that they just took it back and like, okay, maybe he just is that guy.
Right.
But I liked that this video made that completely like concrete when the soldier's like, look, he's going to turn red any minute. He's the red spy. It's like, what? You're just calling him the red spy? Like, that's awesome.
I like the idea that at any given moment, depending on what the need for the video is, there's either one of those guys or any number of them. Like, you know, there have been videos with just tons of soldiers.
Right.
It's either
he's
jumping
he's
around
the soldier or he is a soldier.
Right.
Yeah, it's great.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, it's really, I love that. Anyway, can't wait for that sniper spy update thing.
Yeah.
I might play some more TF2. I might play a video game.
Good job. Yeah. You know, in the future.
I've been playing to prepare, but I still don't understand what they were thinking with the achievements.
I can't stand it either. I don't really like it.
Yeah. I just don't get it. But
they're getting rid of that though, aren't they? Or at least lessening it?
Yeah, yeah, they're going to lessen it.
What are they doing?
Well, what they're going to do is they're
adding drops, right?
Yeah, they're adding drops. We don't really know how they're going to work exactly in terms of the
unlockable.
No,
we know they're adding drops. So just say it back.
Yeah, they're going to add some way of grabbing the achievements with, you know, the unlockable weapons without actually having to grind those achievements. And so yeah.
Sweet.
Also hats.
Yeah, you've got a backpack full of hats and hairstyles.
Yeah.
And,
oh, man, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's rad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. And eventually it's you know, I mean, it's looking pretty likely that there'll be different weapons that will have different statistics and things.
They said that the hats and stuff are statless right now. They're just aesthetic, but the sort of implication is if this system works, that they'll just end up... If there's like a backpack that's just a grid full of stuff that you can collect and equip.
Wow.
Yeah.
Are there many examples? I mean, I guess Counter-Strike was kind of like that. Are there very many examples of multiplayer games that changed this much over time? Not sort of just balanced, but like to the point where they're adding in potentially new game systems like that? I don't think so at all.
This is ridiculous.
I thought some of the Unreal Tournament content packs included at least new game modes. Although I guess they don't just like...
But that, this
where it's like just a straight game, then it's an achievement system.
This is just,
game,
right. yeah, like deliberately like fucking with the balancing.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, it's
like
kind of...
new separate modes.
Yeah, it's
different.
Really mind-boggling like to think about how much work probably goes into just adding a couple of... I mean, like some of these are so... I mean, adding stun effects and just random crap that the game doesn't have already. You know, I mean, it'd be one thing if there were things that stunned people to begin with, but, you know, adding a baseball bat with a ball that stuns some dude, to have to balance that against future updates, you know what I mean? Like, they have to be continuously, I don't know, it's just
insane.
It's
also really interesting just from a game design standpoint because, or like a historical standpoint even. I mean, it's not, you know, it's... With StarCraft or something, you can just kind of go and install StarCraft 1.0 and play it, or you can install the newer one. Really, I guess the only big change there was with Brood War. You know what I mean?
Like, Brood War was a balance, big change, yeah.
Yeah, there's little balance tweaks in between the beginning of the game and Brood War and Brood War and now, but Team Fortress 2 is just this weird gradient. It's not... There wasn't like there was an expansion, per se. It's just been since it... Like, you can never go back and play the game that people reviewed when that game came out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's probably some way to fuck with it and force that to happen. I don't really know, but you know, that's essentially the game itself has just morphed permanently over time.
Yeah, there's probably not a lot of ways to actually force that because Valve, with this kind of like Left 4 Dead, they seem pretty intent on keeping the community from fragmenting.
Right. Yeah, I asked them
Counter Strike,
right, where it's like you're still playing CS 1.6 or like Beta 2 or whatever.
Yeah,
right.
A lot of the competitive players really don't like that you can't do that. I asked Robin Walker if they were going to add some kind of like vanilla mode option. You know. And he didn't seem too keen on that.
Yeah, I can't see them.
He was like, you know, the only people we're really getting complaints from are competitive guys, and, you know, we don't give a shit about them.
I mean, have they expressed any sort of end for this? I mean, like, once they get 9 updates out and have done a refresh on every class, do you think it's going to settle down?
What is the end game for this? I can't, you know, I have to imagine that eventually they'll, you know, I mean, they've got the resources they're putting into this. I mean, yeah, it's good for their business overall, but at some point there has to be some kind of end game.
Right, but I mean, it is.
They haven't talked about it, though.
It does keep this game in the same sort of, like, top of mind sort of like financial idea that you would have with an MMO or something, where it's just there's always new stuff to be discovered with TF2 now, and that probably pisses people off, but it's just I mean, I'm sure it's deliberate. Yeah,
that's their idea. It's just to keep it. I mean, that's their whole stated goal with the idea of games as a service, is just that this isn't something that we sort of release. It's something that it's as we continually provide this thing. It's like, it's a really...
I think once all the unlocks are done and they've got sort of this, you know, item system out, I would assume that it'll naturally sort of, you know, they'll probably release new maps
at some point.
Like
they'll just go maps and game modes.
Then they're gonna have those comics, you know, sort of keep up the awareness. You know, they're doing other things.
I mean,
at the very least,
it'll have been a few years of...
Oh, it's gonna be a long time. Yeah.
I mean, like,
already at this point, it's still pretty unprecedented.
Was that game 06? Did it come out, or 07?
07.
07.
Yeah. End of 07. So, yeah. But that's a long time.
So if you figure it's gonna take them probably at least through this year to get the class updates done, that's a good solid 2 years of just ongoing meaningful development. It's really interesting. It's really weird to think about that as being... I mean, I'm sure it's profitable for them, but it's weird, you know? I mean, they're not getting subscription fees out of that. The only time they ever get any money is when a brand new person buys the game.
Mm-hmm.
Right, like, but I mean, there's got to be a ton of people who don't have Team Fortress.
Oh, I know. I just, you know, it's definitely unusual, though. I mean, can't imagine very many
straight-up
multiplayer developers would do that.
It's a cool business model.
Yeah.
It's cool that it actually works somehow, or seems to be working.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or will be declared a failed experiment in 2 years.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The comics thing, after seeing Meet the Spy, especially... Mm. I really just wish that maybe comics wouldn't happen, and
for some reason someone
would just make a series of spy
video
versus spy-esque video shorts.
Yeah.
Like, man, things that I would happily sit through before a movie include that above anything else that ever plays in those bullshit 20-minute featurettes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What if Valve advertised via, like, with...
Yeah.
That would be hardcore if they did that.
Yeah, I mean, I think all those Meet the Class videos would be super cool to screen in a theater.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, video games, not films. Maybe we should take a little early break here.
Let's do that.
Sweet.
We're breaking.
All right. Video game.
How far did we make it?
Like 20 minutes, probably.
Like 25.
What time? Oh, really?
I'm at 14 minutes. So, and you said there were about 10 minutes at the beginning?
Yeah, probably. It was probably a little less than that.
Video game.
There's the Tony Hawk skateboard.
Oh my god, yeah. Why didn't we talk about that?
We could still talk about it.
Yeah.
There's...
Man, actually, that would be a follow-up to when we predicted that there would be a retarded Tony Hawk skateboard.
Yeah, that's true.
Remember how much fun you had playing Tony Hawk? Well,
here's what's not fun.
Video game.
There is a new team record. Dark God XXX21.
Oh, yeah.
For Ford 200, Tay-Tay 260, and We're All Going to Hell made it over 21 mins on survival mode on The Last Stand. Sarah Goff, Nick Brecken.
What is this?
What is that? You sent it.
Yeah.
Talk about it.
I pull these things in from the internet.
I like that motion.
It's just out there. It's the floating. Just grabbing it.
You look like a
games are too cheap.
I just pull it in right from where it swirled around my head, and I just grab it. Grab the idea.
Hold it within me.
Yeah.
Just I nurture it.
You gotta not let go.
Nurture
it. And just grab. Just grab it all. Keep grabbing.
Just let it boil inside of my
stomach. Video game.
Oh, we're doing a video game?
Yeah, we're back. What did you buy, Nick? You bought something.
I bought Blade Runner.
The movie? The film? The motion picture?
Yeah. This is the movie cast, right? We're doing movies?
Oh, yes. Sorry, for a second I thought you actually did buy the movie and not
the
game.
Yeah. I did buy that, but I also bought the game.
Oh, I see. God. You actually bought both of them?
Yeah.
It's like a 2-pack? Like, sort of like
no,
it
should
bundle.
Be.
Westwood
it should
voxel-based
be.
Adventure
there should
game
be like a coupon for the game.
With the Blu-ray release.
Just confuse the hell amazing out of people.
Sort of like how that new Indiana
God, speaking
Jones
of
game
voxels, I loaded up Outcast.
Oh, man. And that was kind of a crazy game.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I just wanted to see if it was going to run on like Windows 7.
I just wanted to see a voxel after.
Yeah, I did sort of want to see a voxel because I didn't have Blade Runner
voxels
yet.
Crazy. They're
it was like shipping, and I was like, I wonder what a voxel looks like.
Like, everyone always said they looked like shit, but honestly, I thought some of the voxel games looked really good. Like, you could do really smooth 3D in ways you couldn't with
it was pretty amazing
polygons
at the time.
At the time.
Yeah.
But they were always like, they were like the Daikatana of the tech world at the time.
Like, right.
Like, for some
oh,
reason,
voxel,
when I
saw,
you silly
anytime
voxel
anyone mentioned a voxel, it was always with like a snide remark. But I don't know. Like, Blade Runner looked pretty sweet at the time. Like, I don't know how it holds up, but
yeah,
it looked really good, I thought, when it came out.
And, Outcast looks better. I mean, the max resolution for Outcast is 512 by something.
Oh, God. 384?
Yeah, yeah. I guess, the way it runs on a 24-inch monitor...
It's built for a 12-inch VGA screen.
Yeah,
that's
pretty
amazing
much. Yeah, yeah. On a 24-inch monitor, it's just the game, and then the largest black bars you've ever seen in your life.
Yeah. How about Blade Runner? I haven't
played
it
yet, but everybody says it's really good,
cool
and I missed out on it.
I never played Blade Runner either. So.
It's good. It was by Westwood.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
It was. I played all the way through it. It was. I mean, I played through it actually at a time when I was playing a lot of adventure games.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess a lot of them were coming out at the time, or at least, I guess the genre was sort of on a bit of a decline by that point. But you know, there was a lot coming out.
And the internet existed at that point, so that's a good
right.
If you were browsing a website with Flash, it probably means you were no longer playing adventure games.
Right. Yeah, exactly. But there was still a fair amount coming out. I mean, there was enough that Westwood, you know, of all companies, you know, Command & Conquer guys made one. And it was...
Didn't that cost them
made,
a lot of money, though?
They also made the Kyrania games.
Oh, that's true.
They have a history of being adventure developers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's a good point. Yeah. But yeah, I like Blade Runner. I would recommend it. It was a fun...
Where is it available? GOG?
No, it's not available anywhere. In fact, I don't even think it's going to run on my computer when
it's
I get
not,
it.
It's I'm not available
to,
anywhere.
Well, yeah, I bought it.
You
I bought it
eBay or something? What did you do? How did
yeah,
you
I bought it from like Amazon. Some, you know.
Like a seller.
Some random seller, yeah. But
well, let me know if you get it working. I'll be curious.
Yeah, I don't think
I wouldn't mind playing it again. I haven't played it in a long
it's not
time.
It's not DOSBox available or ScumVM. Weird.
Yeah. I have a.
We'll find out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Next week we'll come back and 106 turns in, it crashes.
Yeah.
So that was a stupid, obscure Nick reference.
Oh, to fucking right. Empire. Did you have Empire working?
I see
you on Steam on it occasionally.
Yeah, I sort of go back to it to see if the performance has gotten better.
It really hasn't for me. Jesus.
Yeah.
That's too bad.
I mean, I don't know if they fixed the game ending bug that I was having problems with.
Because
I'm just so turned off by it now.
Yeah, I understand.
Once you get crushed like that, it's really hard to... go back.
Yeah, yeah. Once your spirit is crushed.
Yeah.
It's not surprising that.
Yeah.
I heard you also picked up The Last Express.
I did.
Because everyone is talking about so Jordan Mechner being on Twitter.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, really? Is that what everyone's talking about?
Well,
maybe everyone within our circle.
Yeah, everyone within our
circle. Right, yeah, like
Twitter everybody. Topics, Jay
you know, like Steve Gaynor and you.
Yeah.
Jordan Mechner, honestly, is easily one of my all-time favorite people who's ever worked in the video game industry. I feel like that guy does not get enough he does not get enough credit or discussion. I think he's easily one of the most interesting game designers and has some of the best thoughts on video games. And I think a big part of it is that he doesn't actually develop games like as his sort of day-to-day job. Like, he does so many things. He makes documentary films. He travels a lot. He's been a screenwriter. He's writing the new Sands of Time movie, I guess, or co-wrote it. He's done a lot of research. He's just done a lot of really interesting things with his life. And I really think that, I think that must have an impact, because whenever he does say something, it's always really carefully considered, but he's also very, very like a very down to earth, humble guy.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really interesting combination of qualities that has led to some extremely important games, in my opinion. Not all of which are as influential as they should be. The Last Express is definitely one of those, but I think it's an important game. It should be, or at least it should be considered a more important game and should have been more influential.
Yep,
I think I talked about it on a podcast.
Yeah, you talked about it. I think when you interviewed those guys,
right? Exactly. But it's an incredible game.
Yeah, Steve keeps linking to his blog, which he's put up his old journals and his accounts
for really interesting
years now.
Yeah, it's really fascinating.
He's been posting up just every day. I guess he puts up a few of these, literally just transcribing his personal journal that he recorded in the mid-'80s when he was making Karateka, however you pronounce it, and Prince of Persia, the original one, and just other things in his life going on. He would just write it all in his journal, and he's now going back and putting those up with the date stamps from when they're originally written.
Yep.
It's fascinating because you get little things about, you know, royalty checks that he got from Broderbund and like disagreements he had with the publisher and design decisions and all the process he was going through with in terms of the flow of the game and the design and the goals of the game. It's really fascinating. Especially because he was obviously a much younger person. I mean, that was over 20 years ago at this point, and also with a game that was so recognized for a lot of the things it did with animation and fluidity and things like that. So it's pretty awesome.
Yeah,
I would recommend reading
people
that
should
stuff.
Check that out. Yeah,
yeah, it's on the internet.
Also, he made a post about how what was it? Say Anything, was that the film, like the John Cusack film?
Oh.
He had a post about seeing that movie, like when it came out in theaters, like, you know, he was like, man, I saw that new John Cusack movie, Say Anything. I just gotta say, John Cusack, probably about the perfect man. I really wish I was more like him. It was a pretty amazing thing that
that's great.
It's really good that he didn't have any self-consciousness about
Steve linked the post from him from like 1989, and he was like, yeah, we went to the computer game developers conference. We were gonna walk in or something, but we decided to go to like some theme park, and we rode
flags.
Like the Six Flags. Yeah,
Great America instead.
Yeah, Great America. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, that's hilarious.
Yeah.
So anyway,
that's pretty good.
Good stuff.
Yeah, but I'm looking forward to hearing your thoughts on The Last Express, because
I'm really excited to play that. Especially,
it's a really, really cool.
It looks pretty amazing. Yeah.
Have you played it, Jake?
I've only played part of it because I'm stupid.
It's pretty rad.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, I also just, I guess since we're talking about Jordan Mechner, I saw a trailer for the the Prince of Persia movie.
Speaking of how infallible Jordan Mechner is.
Yeah, I know. Jesus, this does not look like a good piece of film. I mean, I don't think it probably won't be like incompetently made.
It'll probably be better than that clip that's out makes it out to be, but it appears to like, massively bulldoze over all subtlety and interesting facets of the Prince of Persia.
It's also, and I know this is the kind of thing that a lot of people get unnecessarily worked up about, but also it is like fucking Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yeah, right.
He doesn't even look like the prince.
Well, it's just, it really is kind of just a ridiculous, like it does drive home how much of a Bruckheimer Hollywood fest it is. It's like, I don't know. I mean, this might be a weird thing to point out, but one of the things I really liked about the character of the prince in Sands of Time. Well, one thing I liked about Sands of Time, and one thing I like about Mechner in general, is how much of a sense of restraint there is. Like Prince of Persia: Sands of Time was not like an epic mind-blowing, crazy experience. I mean, it was a really restrained, really tightly conceived thing that worked really well from beginning to end and wrapped up really well and had a really kind of touching, well put together story with a character that really grew in a meaningful way. And it's hard for me to imagine that translating. But it's particularly irritating to me that it's like they choose the one in the series that, like, of all the games you can choose, like something like Resident Evil or Doom or whatever, it's like, well, those make shitty movies, but I mean,
Sands of Time does have the most interesting narrative conceit, which is you have this sand in an hourglass or whatever that lets you rewind and correct your mistakes.
Well, they kept doing that though, right? I mean, that's how the other games work too.
Yeah, but I mean,
it's called that.
Prince of Persia, the Two Thrones.
Right.
But we're focusing on the Sands of Time. Right. I think that...
No, it's fair enough. I mean, my point is just that it's unfortunate that, you know, when someone does... I'm just saying, most video game movies are based on games whose narratives I don't really care about very much to begin with. You know, like, they
might be good games. I just don't like that it's associated with that good game.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know. I'm just saying, for a point of comparison, I have more faith in Gore Verbinski to make a decent Bioshock movie, for example, than I do in Jerry Bruckheimer, whatever director for hire he has making this movie, to make a good Sands of Time movie. I mean, right. There is a difference between filmmakers.
But with this movie, there will not be a tie-in game, which is at least, that's like the one. I suppose there might be.
Man, Sands of Time. Bioshock the movie, the game also would be amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
It's an SNES platformer by THQ.
Right. That would be incredible.
Yeah.
That happened with something recently. I can't remember what it was.
I think you're thinking of Street Fighter the movie.
The game?
Yeah. That exists.
Really?
Yeah, it's awesome.
Is it an arcade game?
Yeah. It's also available for the Super Nintendo.
Sweet.
Wow.
But yeah, I don't know. this could be me reading into it, but I liked that the game supported my reading into it. I don't know. I liked the really weird, almost seemed like sort of the accent the prince had in the game. It almost had a shade of like sort of British colonialism to it or something. Like, I don't really know if that makes any sense with the time period of which that game is ostensibly set. I don't really think there's anything particularly historical about that game. I don't think it's really set anywhere particularly concrete one way or the other. But there was, you know, he definitely, and because they're not going to have him, they're going to have him speak in English, obviously.
Yeah.
But I like that they gave it a tinge of something that is somewhat associated with that region, you know, for better or worse. And I don't know. Also, he didn't look like Jake Gyllenhaal. I don't know. Like, just looking at him in that getup was so preposterous. It just looked so...
Well, it looks like if Prince of Persia had been made in like 1947 or something.
Right, exactly. Yeah, that's exactly what I mean. Right.
Yeah.
That kind of ridiculous attitude towards.
I'd actually be fine with them going all out for that, but I don't think that they are.
Probably not.
If it actually is just aesthetically weird Hollywood epic from like the like Charlton Heston.
Yeah,
vintage.
Exactly. Right. Mm.
Yeah. It probably isn't that.
No. That would be a weird, weird decision.
Awesome. Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, he's fighting sort of stop motion rear projection creatures and stuff.
Right.
Yeah, that's coming soon from Jerry Bruckheimer. not that movie.
No.
No.
Except for the accidental callback of Jake Gyllenhaal just wearing weird bronze makeup all over his skin.
Right.
So that's pretty sweet.
It just looks weird. It just looks disgusting. Like, just from a purely visual standpoint, it just looks gross. I'm like, I don't want to look at your face for this whole movie. What the fuck are you doing? Like, you're embarrassing yourself and me.
I don't want to look at your face.
It just... Anyway, you want to do some reader mail? I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about.
That sounds good.
I don't want to look at your face.
It's just, I really didn't like that trailer. All right. Let's see here.
Reader mail.
Yep.
Starring you, the readers.
So, Fraser McMillan, who I think has written in before, writes, "Hey, dudes, remember that reader who thought of Jake as Big Bird?
Yeah.
Ever since, I've had to force myself to think of him as that instead of a bald guy, because the only face I associate with baldness in video games is, you fucking guessed it, Jay Allard. Thus, the image of Big Bird wearing a bald cap is now all I can think about whenever I hear Rod can talk."
What the fuck? Jeez. Wait. The mental image that readers hold of me is just completely gone off a cliff at this point, I think. Also, I actually appear as Jay Allard in the 2005 Idle Thumbs E3 video.
Oh my god, you're right.
Or I guess I appear as Jay Rodkin, but all I say is video games, and then I walk off the stage. But so really find that on the internet.
Yeah, it can be found if you look hard enough.
Yeah.
Probably.
Also, I look nothing like Jay Allard.
No, but you know, the resemblance was close enough in that video.
Yeah.
For its purposes. So anyway, he says, I hope you enjoy the highly professional mock-ups I prepared for his game debut in the handheld spin-off series to Idle Thumb the Game. The next one in the pipeline is Idle Adventures, Chris Remo in Where's Hawking? Notice the two colons, just like a real video game sequel. So he actually attached images here featuring Big Bird. Idle Adventures, Jake's Quest, featuring a puffin and Big Bird with a bald cap, and the laudatory quote, this is an endorsement, IGN.com. Then there's another picture with some kind of fossil going on. I don't really know. In the latest edition of Edge magazine, he also continues, there appears to be a little dig at Chris. On the review section intro... I don't think that's actually true. On the review section intro page of each issue, there's a small column with three of Edge's most played. Among them this month is Valkyrie Profile, Covenant of the Plume. The quote underneath reads, we suspect that if this game had been made by Clint Hawking, the illiterati would be championing its subtle interpersonal mechanics. Japanese and on the DS, silence. Oh, man.
Oh.
I am collectively slapped along with the three other dudes who... I don't even know if there are that many. Whoever fucking wrote about Far Cry 2 all day long.
That's you.
So there's that. I don't know if that's a fair comment, though. A big part of what I really liked about Far Cry 2 was the fidelity of the world and how much I felt like I was sort of in the midst of an African savannah. And
well, maybe you don't know because you didn't play that game.
It's true. I haven't played it on the DS, so maybe I don't fucking know.
It's amazing. Just a gazelle walks in every now and then.
So, all right. So then he adds, so there's that. One more thing. I just bought a game called Far Cry 2. Is it good? I haven't played it. All right, next email. Andrew Drinkwater writes, should gamers care if a game was made under bad working conditions? Is that now or was it ever a really big problem? Bird noise, IGN.com, Blackbox ME. That's a good question.
Should you really care if a game was made under bad working conditions? You probably should.
Like a sneaker?
Like a sneaker? Yeah. I mean, you probably should care. Are you going to find out that information? Probably not.
Yeah.
Does that make it easier to sleep at night? Yes. I'm sure that there are many games, and probably more importantly, there are many game assets that are produced in really shitty conditions.
Yeah.
Probably not like chained to a loom, but definitely I'd imagine that there's some outsourced stuff that would make you cry.
Yeah.
And who's to say?
Yeah. I honestly don't have enough information to really answer this in a meaningful way.
Yeah, we don't know. So maybe a thing.
On a theoretical level, you should probably feel bad about it.
Yeah. You son of a bitch.
Jordan Cohen writes, this Stalker 2 on CryEngine 3, have you guys heard or read about this? I hadn't. Have you guys?
No.
Nope.
It's interesting. Apparently they're making Stalker 2 using that engine. That hasn't not been licensed very much, the CryEngine 3. Well, actually, I should say CryEngine 2 hasn't been licensed very much. CryEngine 3 was only just announced.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. Maybe that'll allow them to make a game faster.
Yeah.
I mean, theoretically, it would be. I mean, the CryEngine editing tools seem fucking incredible in terms of being able to just spit out stuff in real time at an amazing
pace. And Stalker's, more or less suited to that.
Yeah,
yeah, it's going to be like outdoor.
Yeah.
500,000 barrels in a whirlwind exploding.
Cool.
The shadow of barrels.
Thanks, Nick.
You're welcome.
Ben Ziegler has a question for the podcast. He says, hey, Chris, I learned to play the guitar recently, and I have the occasional urge to write a humorous song about video games. However, the combination of laziness and fear of creating something horrible and filk-like prevents me from ever actually doing so. How do you get yourself to actually write clever but dorky songs without getting self-conscious about it? Well, when you do, that is.
Burn.
Ben Ziegler. Well, as far as the lazy part, you might have observed,
we haven't had a song in like 10 episodes. Yeah, that's cool.
I might have that similar thing going on. As far as not feeling self-conscious about it, I don't really know. Just do it, I guess. I mean, we already spend a fucking an hour every week being stupid into a microphone.
An hour.
I'm just saying, like, on a regular basis, we broadcast to the internet. Our completely unprepared
working conditions
thoughts
are pretty terrible.
Yeah. So you should feel bad about listening to this.
Yes.
Matthew Cole, we're blasting through these, I guess. what?
Nick's talking about
when I'm being quiet, I'm just sitting here making sneakers. Anyway, keep going.
Okay. Matthew Cole writes, dear Thumbs, great show, but I have this problem. What? Every time I see the title for the Conf Grenade, Don't Look at Me, I'm Hideo, I always read it, and I know that's Hideo, but whatever. I always read it as an excuse, like, don't blame me, I voted for Popeyes. What? This constructs an elaborate fantasy in my head where Konami's disastrous unveiling of 6 days in Fallujah leads an executive at the company to berate Hideo Kojima for creating a false expectation that gamers want real stories in their games about nuance and PMCs and blowing stuff up. Kojima's response, "Don't look at me, I'm Hideo." Then he prances off down the hallway. That could happen.
That's a valid title.
That's I really like that.
Yeah. I think that's why we named it that, actually.
Is it?
Insider Scoop.
Yeah. Thanks for casting pods in my face, Matt. You're welcome. Ryan Wianco writes, best stalker bug ever. There was a point in Stalker 1 where you were trashing down a fortified position that would crash 100% of the time at a certain point in the original version of the game. That was probably 30 to 40 hours into the game. So the logical thing here is to go to the game website and find the upgrade, which coincidentally enough fixes the bug. So I grab the upgrade, shout with glee, and install it, only to find that the upgrade completely corrupts all save games, auto and quick saves. Nothing you can do about it, no warning when installing the patch, just a big old foot up your ass when you try to load your save games again. Needless to say, the box went flying out the window at this point. Ryan Wianco, industrybroadcast.com. I thought there was going to be more to that story. Yes, to increase the chances of this email getting read on the air, I should know that I'm getting two BJs while writing this and listening to the podcast at the same time in a convertible 1972 Ford GT. Okay, PPS, doubly increase the chances. Shit, piss, cunt, fuck, bitch. Well, you succeeded, I guess. Good job.
I don't know. There was no Far Cry reference. I think we should edit this out.
He made a reference to that other email, though, about getting a BJ while listening to the podcast, which is the worst. Yeah. Stop referring to that. Yeah, that's not a callback.
No. Tom Bryan has sent us an email with the subject, XXX, enlarge your bargo in 2 to 3 weeks, XXX. The text of which is, what the fuck is game? Thanks, Tom.
Well, that's good.
Nicholas DiMucci writes, what's up, Idle Thumbs? Of course, the big news of the week is 3DR closing its doors. What do you think will become of the many developers who are now jobless? Do you think the fact that they're producing a game for over 13 years without a chance to release will hinder their chance to find work at other studios? Or do you think management and producers will have the most difficult time? Either way, it's a sad day for gamers, and I wish nothing but the best for devs at 3DR. Thanks for producing such an awesome cast. Freaky Nipples 69.
I know that a lot of them have already found jobs. So.
Oh, good. Yeah. That's actually pretty encouraging, considering, you know, honestly, how tough it is for a lot of developers who don't have.
I shouldn't say a lot. I don't know.
But they're all hired.
Yeah, right. Yeah, everybody's got a meal. No, I don't know, but I know quite a few.
I think it would take a weird person to by default hold working on Duke Nukem Forever against someone.
Yeah.
I mean, if a particular person showed up and was like, "I'm obviously part of the reason that this game never came out," I think, I don't know, who would say that?
Right.
But just like a rank and file developer who is like,
if you're
probably
just
hitting their own milestones.
If you're just a dude and you have good work to show for it, I think you're the same as anyone else. I mean, I don't really know. I don't know people.
But I mean, yeah, but generally the way this industry works, I mean, we get a lot of, I just mean at Kama Sutra, we get a lot of, like, we do a lot of research into the way people are hired and the way they get their jobs. It doesn't actually really matter that much what you've worked on in the past. Like, that's not actually that important to get hired somewhere else in the games industry. It's much more important to just fit well with the interview and have work to show. I mean, they're probably not thrilled about the fact that they haven't actually gone through like a full complete production cycle that got a game on a shelf. But I mean, as long as you have a reel where you can show.
Yeah, it seems good at work. Least like people, you look for someone who looks like they will fit in and not be a dumbass and knows how to make content.
Yeah. So they'll probably be okay. I mean, at least they'll be as okay as anyone else in the industry is right now unfortunately,
I mean, like, if your job is scheduling manager, you might be in trouble.
That job probably did not exist.
Like, treasurer, I don't know, like CFO.
Most of those,
It's really weird reading old George Broussard quotes now. I mean, these were sort of hilarious, but now they're kind of hilarious and tragic, where he's just like, yeah, we don't have schedules. We don't believe in that. We make the game we want to make, and we're never going to give a shipping date.
Yeah.
This all kinds
some of them are
of stuff
just
like
so
that.
Damning.
Some of them really are very self-incriminating. It's pretty unbelievable.
We're just going to ship the game and, you know, call me an asshole if we never ship this game. You know what I mean? Just like stuff like that. Just there are some old Shaq comments that are just, ugh, man.
And then all the promises about profit sharing and royalties. And God. Yeah, I know that Charlie Wiederhold, who got out, you know, earlier.
Like 2006 or something?
Yeah, but he's at Infinity Ward now, which is pretty cool. So, good for him.
Yeah.
So we know that guy is all right.
Yep. Duke Nukem, weird. What a weird thing.
Yeah. I can hardly believe it.
And then I guess Scott Miller is doing his Radar Group thing.
Yeah.
All right, so Boston Lowe writes, embargoes are stupid.
Boston Lowe? The commander of the shuttle from the dig.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway. Sorry. Boston Law.
Yeah, he's from a video game.
Record scratch.
A computer game. The common belief, he says, is that print magazines pressure game publishers to hang embargoes on previews so that everybody gets to break the news at the same time, but I don't buy it. 99% of game journalists are working for online sites, and the remaining 1% print magazines already have complimentary online sites to go with their magazines, so there's got to be reasons beyond the archaic traditions why embargoes still exist.
There are.
I offer this alternative theory. Publishers are employing what is commonly known as foot-in-the-door technique in psychology. The idea being, if one is willing to follow a small illogical order, i.e. an embargo on a game preview, then the one is easier to be coerced into following a bigger and equally illogical order, e.g. better review scores. Prison camps often use this technique to train new torturers, and it is surprisingly effective. Love the podcast.
I will say you are completely wrong and possibly offensive and possibly full of shit.
Oh, man. You're offending a pilot of a space shuttle.
All right. So, Chris, we've got a new game coming out here at Idle Thumbs Games. It's not coming out for 3 weeks, but I want to show you now so you can have your article ready to go. I'm torturing you at a prison camp.
9.8.
Yeah, I mean, embargoes exist because... I mean, it's weird that the implication here is that embargoes exist sort of so that print magazines can maintain... It can be relevant. That's possibly
true.
That
actually
true.
Is sometimes
yeah,
true.
Yeah, that's... There's
like, really?
Yes.
Man, because...
It's still...
Whenever we have an embargo at Telltale, it's just because... because it seems... We do it sort of as a lack of favoritism so that the person who comes into the office first doesn't just get the scoop because they happen to be scheduled a day earlier than someone else.
Yeah, that's part of it, quite often. But you also, you've got the one who gets to go ahead of the embargo, then everyone else
right.
who want lack of
favoritism. That's not always true, though.
That's true a lot of the time.
You said you don't think that's a factor, and I'm saying it is. Like,
okay. there are exclusives, but it's not always a print magazine either.
No, that's it could be game trailers, exclusives,
but I mean, that's
or whatever,
an extremely
but...
common thing is for them to put an embargo on something so that the print press can get it out.
That's fair enough, but it's not. Okay, fine. Maybe it is.
Yeah, it is. Like that actually happens a lot with European press as well for whatever reason.
Really?
Yeah.
All right. Well, maybe I'm an asshole then.
But it's. Well, I think it's. Well, I mean, I think the second half.
I mean, I
yeah,
feel like
I
that,
think
that email is
correct about that.
Drives itself off a cliff.
Yeah,
and
I mean, the reason is just because they want their shit to be coordinated. I mean, there are a few reasons. One is they want all their stuff to go up at the same time so that they can coordinate a sustained but a really concentrated PR assault and monitor what's going up when and who's going to what sites and so forth. Also, they do it for the print magazine reason as specified because there is still a really regardless of how important anyone thinks print is, and it's definitely of decreasing relevance, there still is there's a certain cachet with being like, for example, a cover story in print mag that is just not remotely close.
Yeah, that stuff is all true. The thing that I guess maybe bothers me about what he was saying, where it's as if there's this sort of like subversive / authoritarian silencing going on.
Yeah.
Games writers are free to write whatever the fuck they want. That's like journalism, news, whatever. If you're covering a game as a reviewer,
yeah,
that's not the same thing as writing a news story about it. I mean, like,
yeah.
If anything,
I would say from an embargo standpoint, more often I am put off from a game than if somebody is given an exclusive and I'm sitting waiting on an embargo, then that's going to, I would assume the opposite, I guess, even though I don't really pay attention to that, but I would think that,
if you as a journalist find out a piece of information on your own, check the source, cover it, go to fucking town. If a publisher says, come into our office and see something that we're not actually showing or announcing yet, with the expressed agreement that you won't talk about it until we're actually releasing it, then you have two choices. You either don't go in and see it, and then you have nothing to say, or you come in and see it. I mean, that's just how reality works. I mean, you're not somehow being cunning or subversive by going in and saying, sure, I'll take a look at this game, and then covering it 3 seconds later. That doesn't make you cool. That
no,
makes you a
bullshit.
Child.
Yeah.
And embargoes are actually a thing that happens in every industry, including non-entertainment journalism.
Right.
That's something that happens just in the world.
Yeah.
Like, generally speaking. Like, if a company... If someone is showing you something, just, Right. Not out of the kindness of their heart, obviously.
No, yeah, it's not the courtesy is not the word, but it's
if they're
it's,
hosting you and they're determining the terms, it's their I
right.
mean
but yeah, as a journalist, you're free to figure out that information exactly, on your own and
right,
cover it.
Exactly. Yeah, right. But
that's encouraged. Like that's what you should be doing as right. a journalist. You should be finding out information and publishing it. But you can't walk in, take a handout, and then act as if you've got some subversive scoop, and if you and claim that the alternative to that is that the like publishing industry and development industry are a bunch of like
fascists.
Crazy like psycho manipulative yeah. fascists.
Right. Yeah,
that's sort of a naive assumption about how embargoes work. I think.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. but that's
well, I don't know if it's naive as much of it's just sort of conspiratorial.
Like, yeah, I guess conspiratorial. Yeah. Yes, fair enough. But
it's
yeah,
a conspiracy.
It's that, that made me pissed, apparently,
yeah,
when I
yeah,
read that
Jake
email.
Really had an adverse
Sorry.
Reaction.
Yeah.
Well, it's just, I think, I just like a lot of other things in games, like, I guess, I don't know, DRM, I don't know what. I think embargoes are kind of dumb, or if they're not dumb, they're definitely occasionally manipulated or overused to the, where like what you were, you said, where it's like, why this piece of information being embargoed just makes me less interested in it. I think it yeah. happens sometimes,
yeah.
but
yeah, well,
they have their place as a device though. So it's not, you know, you
yeah.
can't, you can't,
yeah, no, I mean, you can't complain about it. I mean, there's
nice
nothing
at,
to,
they're nice at times. I mean, honestly, like if, I mean, this doesn't matter as much where I am now, but like, for example, when I was at Shaq and I actually had to do
right.
previews of games.
You have 2 weeks to yeah. put your story together before you worry
right.
that like IGN
it
is just
sucks.
Gonna shit
well,
something
it
out.
It sucks if I know that. That Kotaku is literally going to have this up within an hour. They're just going to shit out, you
yeah.
know, some preview like
right.
immediately. Like
that's, exclusives lately though have really gotten pretty prevalent. Like
yeah,
especially with game
I
trailers,
yeah.
the world exclusives.
Oh, you
every time
big,
you go
yeah.
to an event, you know, you're embargoed until a certain
yeah.
point, and then inevitably, game trailers has
right.
it out on Friday the week before or something.
Right. right.
And that sort of
yeah.
becomes very frustrating.
That's more
but,
of the irritating part about embargoes.
Yeah,
is how
yeah.
it sort of just turns into essentially a monopoly.
Right.
With
yeah.
With,
yeah.
Yeah. yeah. yeah.
But there's nothing
the
you can do about it. I mean, what?
Embargoes, I don't have a problem with. Yeah, but yeah, there isn't anything you can do about it, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Anyway, so next email. Kazura Corky writes, greetings, you manliest of men. First of all, let me say I love you guys and your podcast to the full extent of my heart. You're the best, Jerry. I'm writing this in order to thank you for your direct involvement of me getting admitted to Harvard. Okay. Allow me to elaborate. As a Scandinavian student, I had to take an English proficiency test in order to be able to study anywhere in the U.S., and A, yada, yada, yada. Without you, it would have been impossible for me to nail the writing, speaking, and vocabulary sections. Needless to say, your wonderfully witty banter and profusely articulate demeanor has attributed immensely to my test results, and for that, I'm extremely grateful. Thank you very much for your wonderful podcast. Forever yours, Corky. Wow. Well, you're welcome.
Sweet.
All right. That's
weird.
Good.
I thought we just said poop a lot.
Yeah, I know.
We might have also demonstrated a Harvard
well, none
level.
Of us also, yeah. None of yeah, right. us tried applying to Harvard.
That's
like,
true.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
This
podcast
well,
needs to be run through
Jesus.
That literacy
yeah. now you know.
Calculator.
Also, sorry I went insane about the embargoes question a second ago.
Boston Low will never listen to our podcast again.
I know. Sorry, Boston.
Big Bird spoiled his day.
That is the true legend of Big Bird's bones.
One thing I want to say about this last email, though, is it's actually, you know, I haven't personally had this experience since I'm a native English speaker, but definitely knowing dudes from Europe, it
literally.
Like Merrick, for example, one of the Idle Thumbs guys, he always talked about how adventure games were a big part of
oh, yeah.
how he learned to speak English.
I've talked to a lot. It's like,
and
he's
a really proficient English
yeah.
speaker.
On the AdventureGamers.com forums, there were a decent number of people who did that. But I remember
yeah,
Merrick saying that he would ask his English teacher what completely insane words meant when he was playing Monkey Island or something.
Yeah.
I wonder if the fact that the Scum games actually had you conjugate sentences in English
yeah.
helped
yeah.
with that.
I think it probably did.
Yeah.
You had to be thinking about how those
right.
verbs worked.
Yeah.
Speaking of languages, somebody made a... I don't remember where I heard this, but somebody was talking about how... playing a game, God, it was like Fallout 3 or something. Oh, they had downloaded the DLC for Fallout 3 and had accidentally downloaded like the French version because they were in Canada.
Oh, right, I saw
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And
NeoGaf.
He was, yeah,
that was.
Or, I think I saw it on Shaq. Maybe it was cross posting,
yeah.
but anyway, yeah. Maybe a lot of people had that problem.
This guy. Well, just to recap, this guy.
Story.
Yeah,
oh,
this guy
well.
Downloaded. He attempted to download content for Fallout, and apparently it was the French version. But the label didn't pop up unless
right.
you scroll all the way down to the bottom
yeah,
of the
yeah.
description. It was the default thing
probably happened
that
a lot
showed
of
up on his screen, like not in France, and it was just someone fucked up with the Xbox Live Marketplace, and Microsoft refused to refund it or swap it out or
mm-hmm.
let him get the English one in any way. And he just went back and forth, and they just refused.
But it
ridiculous.
Made me think about how, I don't know, kind of refreshing it would be to sort of play a game in a foreign language. I don't. I would sort of enjoy that in a way, just because people, the subtitles are already built into that game.
I know some people who played Beyond Good and Evil in French, which I think is kind of actually you an awesome idea.
You can do that with Yakuza, too, which is pretty cool.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I suppose Japanese
games. But you can't with the upcoming new Final Fantasy game.
Yeah, right. Yeah. That's like the game that people are worried about with that. I don't know.
Man, this on a sort of... Not a game, but...
What?
There's a film, Goodbye Lenin. I don't know if you guys...
I know it exists.
Yeah.
And I actually watched that movie with no subtitles and no English dubbing.
Yeah, I've done stuff like that
just
before.
Just for hell of it. It was really cool. It was like, I got the... Like, you know, it was enough such that I really got the meaning just via what was going on in the scenes.
Right.
And it was a really interesting way to watch a foreign film, and mm-hmm. I really enjoyed it. And I got a lot out of it. It was really, really unusual. It made me pay attention to the movie in a way that I, in like a much more like intense way than I usually do. And
I have a stupid confession, which is that I'm still watching Heroes, and I, even though I hate it, it's shit. But there was some fuck up in the encoding with the Netflix Instant View version of this Heroes season 3 finale, where it didn't have the dialogue track.
Uh-huh.
It was just the music and ambient sound.
Weird.
So like for the previously on Heroes, you know, it just shows like the spinning globe and says previously on. It has the music, and I was like, what the hell is this? Some weird artsy thing they're doing just for the recap?
Yes.
It's a character sort of talking, but there's like weird echoey foley because the actual foley isn't there. But like the ambient track was just like someone would set down an object and sort of like.
So it's just the post-processing?
It's the post-processing, the music, and the ambience.
That's crazy.
And I was like, wow, this is... They're going really avant-garde with this episode of Heroes. I was like, I'll wait. Surely at some point there's going to be like a plot contrivance that kicks in and people can suddenly hear again. Or like, I'm hearing this from the perspective of someone who's
some
like...
some kind of crazy event.
Yeah. And I watched it for like 30 minutes. Like, this is amazing. God, Heroes is just bold. Fucking bold. This is crazy. I think maybe at this point I should be hearing what they're saying, though. And then I was like, oh, okay. And I bought it on Amazon Unboxed. It was like, previously on Heroes. I was like, oh, okay. Well, this is shit. It's just a bunch of bad, like, stumpy exposition. All right, well, that's too bad.
Was it enjoyable to watch with the...
Yeah, it was awesome. I was totally following everything that was going on. It was just like super subtle visual storytelling. It's like, oh, the expression on his face just says so much. Oh, but then his voice was saying, we've got to get out of here now. Like, oh, okay, well, fuck. Never mind.
That's like the minimalist Garfield strips, like where you just remove something and it becomes a completely different thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
God, I would be really interested in trying to seek that out. I wonder if they ever corrected it.
Yeah, it's worth trying. I was watching it. I was watching it on like the Roku Netflix box. But you check out the Heroes season finale on your 360 and see if you just get the ambient sound.
I'll do that after you guys leave to get out of my apartment.
Yeah.
No, that's pretty amazing. Yeah, that's pretty interesting.
So that was cool. Are there any more reader mails?
I think that's all.
I have a reader mail type question, actually.
What is
just something I was thinking about?
From Nick Brecken.
Nick Breedon from Bangladesh. What
is game?
What is game? No, what? If you guys ever played a game does a game exist where the primary mode, like the primary graphics mode, is like the default is black and white? Has there ever been a game made for
Mad World?
No, more like.
Saboteur.
Pong?
Really? Saboteur? The Saboteur is that?
I think, that's that game largely in black and white.
You
and
turn
then
the game into color.
As you liberate people from the Nazis, the game becomes color, like Pleasantville.
Oh, okay.
That's true.
Jesus Christ.
It is basically Pleasantville,
Except that you're liberating people from the Nazis.
If none of those three examples count, then what the hell are you talking about?
I don't know.
Could you give an example?
Sam MX Hit the Road.
Well, I was just curious if that's ever been really messed around with at all.
I'm sure there are some...
In the same way that foreign languages intrigued me. The fact that, you know... Anyway.
I know there are a couple... there's like some adventure games that work like that. Like the ones... Mark Darren, who's a designer at Telltale, made a bunch of games starring a private investigator called Nick Bounty. They're like throwback cartoon noir games that are black and white. But I mean, are you talking about like...
No, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I mean, there are games that are in black and white.
Cool. And there's that game, The Unfinished Swan, that indie game. I don't know if it actually
was... By Ian Dallas, another former writer of Telltale Games.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
So Telltale Games loves having people who, either before or after working there, produce black and white games to appease Nick Brecken.
Including the original Sam & Max, I guess.
Sam & Max Hit the Road also has black and white mode.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It has grayscale mode, yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah, I didn't really... Yeah.
But yeah, you know, Pong...
I meant for like a cinematic effect,
Does like Hercules graphics orange and black count? Because then pretty much every PC game...
Yeah.
No, yeah. I meant as an intentional effect, but yeah.
Oh. Okay. No,
there aren't any. Text Adventures?
Yeah.
Jokes.
Oh, God, jokes.
I'm going to just ask a question to the audience because it's something
from Jake Rodkin.
This is a question I have for the world, which has nothing to do with anything other than I have this microphone that I can ask a question to. Does a short science fiction story exist wherein the protagonist travels back in time to collect the parts to build his own time machine?
Jesus.
Is this because you just thought of this or because you...
Yeah, I was thinking about... there's the type of time travel in movies where you go back in time and that like causes the timeline to branch, or there's the one where it's a sort of like loop of
recursive
fate.
Yeah.
Right. So like if the only reason that you have the parts for your time machine is because you went back in time and set them in your garage, that would be extreme.
I mean, there are definitely stories that essentially do that, but none that so overtly.
Right.
You know what I mean? There are ones that have that same cause and effect, but none that I know of that actually say
it
literally.
It just occurred to me as a stupid, weird analogy for that type of time travel versus the kind where that's not possible because you go back in time and then you're in alternate 1985.
And then 1985. There's two of you. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But so if that exists and isn't shit, I would happily read it. Thank you.
Someone make a video game. A Day of the Tentacle style video game.
That's it. Just stop it right there.
We already skipped an episode, so we can't just skip another one. This is such a failure. Christ.
Games. You guys are just reading your iPhones?
What? Jesus, Jake. We just released like 5 minutes of Jake's laughing.
You're the scariest goddamn blast you've ever heard.
Why are you doing this? Video game.